graphic warning. Tonight's going to be all about nakedness, and we're actually starting in the non-graphic portions of this sugya. The stuff that came right before this is even more, eyebrow raising. But we're going to talk about some more tame stuff. So we're starting actually Kaf Dalet and Aleph. I think you guys should have the top of the page. It should actually indicate what daf you're on. Kaf Dalet and Aleph. We're kind of towards the bottom. We're going to start with how do I describe this? The words are Amar Mar Im Hayu Banav Uvnei Beito Ktanim. Everybody see what I'm talking about?
No.
So it's there are two dots, kind of towards the middle of the wide lines.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, that's right. We're learning the Ilu Nishmat Yigal,
Yishai
Ben
Eliyahu
Velevana. Right, that's Georgie who passed away this morning. Yizichor Baruch, Tzorah B'Tzorah Chaim. So let's begin. So the sugya in general has been talking about cases where you may or may not be allowed to say Kriyat Shema due to the presence of naked people yourself or somebody else. All right. Now, one concept the Mishnah had mentioned is that what happens if you're in the presence of people not wearing clothes but they're part of your family. So the Gemara jumps in over there. Amar Mar, imayu banav uvnei veito ktanim mutar. So let's say you're actually sleeping in a bed. You know, let's say you know, go back in the day. You don't really have to go back so far. This still happens today. The children crawl into bed with you, and somebody here is not, and somebody's not dressed. So either the children or their parents, whoever it is not dressed.
Except at that time, you used to sleep undressed. Right.
Right. No. So they definitely slept undressed more often back then, and also they probably had fewer beds, so this is more likely to happen. But it still happens sometimes. So what happens then? Are you allowed to say Kriyat Shema when you have family members, even children, in your bed? And the answer is mutar. Vad kama. So it says, okay, but until what age is that true? Amar Rav Chista, tinoket bat shalosh shanim. All right. So Rav Chista says, until the age of 3 for a girl, v'yom echad, v'tinok ben teisha shanim. So once the girl reaches 3, her nakedness is already enough that you are not allowed to say Kriyat Shema in front of her. And once a boy reaches 9, his nakedness is already that you're not allowed to say Kriyat Shema in front of him. Ikeda Amri, there's another opinion that says, tinok et bad yud alev shana v'yom echad, v'tinok ben shnemesre shana v'yom echad. There is another opinion that says 11 and 12. Basically, it says until their sexual organs become visible and noticeable. That's basically what it means. Shadayim, we know what it is. Sarech is the hair in the groin area. So that is when a boy is clearly coming of age. So that's the age. All right. At that point, the child is adult enough that you're not allowed to say Kriyat Shema in front of them when they're naked. Anything less than that, you are.
Sorry, can I start the idi v'idi? Is that a third opinion or that's expected?
No, idi v'idi means this and this. They both agree. They're both trying to fit into... Exactly. They're trying to fit into the point in time that the Navi mentions.
There's no logical about a three-year-old.
No. Why? Because it's... Because she doesn't have... her chest is not developed yet. That's true, but...
The problem's not the baby.
Well,
the problem's your thoughts.
Also, no, up to the age of 3.
Say that, but if it's supposed to be a Shadayach Nachonu.
That's what I was talking about. If we're giving him a smacht of
the Timzok, the Nisha.
I think after the age of 3, I know this sounds ridiculous, but I think a baby after the age of 3 is already considered.
You can tell the difference between a boy and a girl. At the age of once it's a girl, that's what Moshe Feinstein says. He says once they reach the age of 3, you can tell that it's a girl just by kind of looking at her. Not even when she's naked. Just like you can kind of tell that it's a girl. It starts to develop girlish features as opposed to a boy, and maybe that's what they're arguing about: whether or not you have to actually see, you know, developments, or whether you just have to be able to tell that it's a girl. That could be what they're arguing about. Okay.
The issue here is it's a. Of seeing them naked when you want to say Kriyat Shema?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The premise here is that you're not allowed to say Kriyat Shema in front of somebody who's naked.
I can ask. And silly question.
Visibly.
Why not?
Visibly naked.
Well,
I mean, yeah.
That's the definition of naked. Yes.
Why not?
why are you not allowed to say Kriyat Shema in front of somebody while they're naked?
Yeah.
It's like you're not allowed to learn any Torah in front of somebody that's naked.
Can I ask a question? I don't mean to jump the gun. I think I learned this before. Does this also count for your wife who's not walking around with her hair covered?
We're going to get there.
Yeah, but why?
We're going to get there.
But what is the problem in...
Even Adam would not encounter Hashem naked.
I still don't understand.
Well, it's to do with kavod. It's to do with having.
I can understand
there
why
could be two options.
Right,
there could be two options. One could be an issue of kavod, and the other could be an issue of hirhur.
Oh, so if it's hirhur, so
it's probably not hirhur. It's probably kavod. Probably kavod of Torah.
Is there a pasuk here that tells us that it's an issue of tznias?
I don't think so.
Is this the same issue of tznias that's just like generally accepted, that one needs to be men and women both need to be tznias?
No, it's not. It's probably not, although that is something that's going to come up when we start to learn the halachos that, you know, that we're going to get to. But as far as I know...
We don't actually know why.
No. Okay. I mean... It could be that it's just self-evident what exactly is going on over here.
4-year-olds in bed with you, and they're not wearing clothes, you can't say
they're naked, so it's covered. They're naked and it's...
They're not in bed. No, under a cover.
They're lying on top of the cover.
I'm assuming they're talking about like...
And by the way, your own nakedness, that's why it's probably not about her, it's more about kavod. You can't say a bracha if you are naked. And the way to fix it is to put on a belt.
That's a good dumb question.
We're not going to get to. But really, if it's your own nakedness, so it's not, you're not allowed to say a bracha or say Kriyat Shema if there's nothing separating the top of your body from the bottom of your body. That's the makor of a gartel. Now most everybody in the world says, well, my underwear is is
elastic.
So, but Hasidim say you have to do it bekavana. You have to separate. It's not. Yeah.
I'm just trying to ascertain whether the reason is covered the Torah, or whether the issue is here or not. So two different reasons entirely.
Presumably, yeah. Okay. So let's continue. So. Okay, this part requires knowledge of what happened, like what came before, so we'll just run through it. So, because Shmuel over here, what's his view? Shmuel's view over here is not mentioned. What happens when you're with your wife? So Shmuel before said that, what?
Now going back, it's very strange. Rashi says that Bat Shalosh and Bat Tesha, she was mantan by Indichlal Bia. Bat Shalosh, that's strange statement.
It's a different world. Different world. Shmuel previously had said that in some cases, viewing your wife's nakedness is okay and you're allowed to in front of it in certain cases. So the question is, what about this? Where it's full blown, you know, it's completely naked. So Rava said, what are you talking about? It's not the same thing. Not everything is made out of the same cloth. When he said it over there, it was true, but here, he didn't say it over here. He would not say that you're allowed to say Kriyat Shema in front of your own wife. This is pretty much as risque as it's going to get. What happens if a boy or a man is standing in front of you and hair is coming out of his fly? So what's the status of that hair? Is that hair considered nakedness, or is it just considered hair? What's the status of that? And the answer is that the Gemara says it's Seyar. It's not considered Erva. It's just Seyar. All right. Rashi says Klomar Mabakach. It doesn't hold any. It's not qualify as Erva. All right. Let's continue. Am Rabbi Yitzchak Tevach. Okay. Here's the big lines. Tevach beisha Erva.
Yes.
Even a single tefach by a woman is an erva. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean? What does that mean?
Front or back?
What does that mean? What does it even mean?
Cheek.
No. What is it?
Usually,
what does it mean?
It's something that should be covered.
So we take it as a measurement, and they said a tefach by an isha is erva. What?
I'm talking about hair.
It's talking about hair.
It's talking about hair. It's talking about a part of the body that's not normally exposed.
So Simon says it's talking about a part of the body that's not normally exposed. And what does it mean?
It could be the hair.
That a part of the body that's not normally exposed, in order for it to be to rise to the level of erba, you have to have a tefach of it exposed. Is that what that means? Yeah. And then you can't say kriyat shema. So if it's less than a tefach, you can say kriyat shema?
Fine.
The answer is yes. And the other answer is if you have erva from less than a tefach, you also can't say kriyat shema.
So then what is it? Why does it say tefach b'yivash erva? What does that mean? Gemara is very particular. Tefach b'isha, erva.
Tefach is it's the normal measurement that you would expect to consider. Like if you were sitting in a place and there was a woman there who was exposing something that isn't normally exposed, and there was less than a tefach, you would be able to say that, okay, I'm not looking at this woman, I'm not aroused by this, there's no erva here.
So if you're sitting in front of a woman and she's got a hole in her shirt right here, but it's less than a tefach circumference, let's say, so it's fine. You can say kriyat shema in front of them.
As long as it doesn't arouse you here or there.
You just inserted something that wasn't there.
What if she's nursing? She's nursing a baby.
What if she's nursing a baby in front of you and you can see part of her skin and it's less than a tefach? So can you say kriyat shema in front of that?
Generally.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's the question. So is that what we're talking about? Is that what tefach b'isha erva means? Sorry. As long as it's not a tefach, so it doesn't matter what part of her body it is.
But the question is, how much is a tefach?
We don't have to guess. We can just continue.
I always thought it was four finger breadth.
It is this much. Amar b'yisach, tefach b'isha erva. So the Gemara immediately says, Lamai, what are we talking about here? Maybe we're not even talking about kriyat shema. We're just talking about tefach b'isha erva listekuli ba. You're not allowed to mistakel. You're not allowed to stare. Let's assume that's what istakel means over here. Yeah. Stare at a woman's bare skin. So it means that as long as it's more than a tefach, so that's prohibited. But less than a tefach would not be prohibited.
Somebody else's wife.
That would seem to be what it means. Yes, and it would obviously be somebody else's wife, and not your own wife, because then there would be no yisur there. V'ha amar of sheishes lama mana akatzuf tachshitin shebachutz im tachshitin shebefnim lomar lecha kol mistakel be'etzaktana shel isha kilu mistakel b'makom atorf. This is a weird way of phrasing the question. But Rav Sheishes says if you look in the Mishnayos and Shabbos when it talks about the jewelry that a woman goes out on Shabbos, what kind of jewelry she's allowed to go out in and what kind of jewelry is considered carrying. So it lumps together jewelry that is on the part of her body which is exposed with jewelry that's on the part of her body which is not exposed. Mashma, that it's all the same. This is how Rosh Hashanah reads that. Mashma, that it's all the same. And therefore, he says, if you even look at an etzba ketana, which is an exposed part of a woman, even a little bit of her, it's as if you looked, as long as you were in mistakel, right? Mistakel be'ezbaktana. If you're staring at the ezbaktana in a way that you're trying to get hana from it, presumably. So it's as if you looked at a very private part of her body. Which means, an ezbaktana is certainly smaller than a tefach, which means that any part of her body, if you stare at it, it's going to be a problem.
How did we move to staring? From kriyat shema?
No, we didn't. You're right. That's the first attempt. That's the first attempt.
It's presence.
We did a reboot. We read a sentence. The sentence says tefach be'isha erva. Now we're trying to figure out what that means. The first attempt is it means that you're not allowed to stare at a tefach be'isha, and that was rejected. That so far has been rejected because you're not allowed to stare even at less than that.
It seems to me like it's saying more than that because the first thing is erva is talking about the woman. It doesn't even need to interrelate with the way I'm behaving or looking, not looking. It's an erva. There's something that she's done wrong. Interesting. The etzba tana is talking about me staring at her and how much skin is exposed.
I appreciate what you're saying, and I actually want to get back to that kind of thinking later, but I think it's undeniable that the Gemara's first attempt is all man-centric. It says Lamai is tekuliba. What are we talking about? That's erva. We're talking about that's erva for a man to stare at.
Okay, but it's said the principle and it's applying it in the context of what we're learning, which is nakedness.
It's going to be the next step of the Gemara.
It could stand alone and to be understood and on the watchers.
The discussion didn't start there. The discussion didn't start there, but it is going to get there.
Rashi limits it to an Asian ish.
Yeah, which is what Simon pointed out, because obviously nobody would say that it's asur li stakel b'ish tefach. Nobody would say that. that. That doesn't make any sense. So of course it's Asian.
You can stare at a single woman. But she's not also Egyptian.
Hold on. So let's keep going. So
the reason is understandable.
Not good. Ella, a second answer. Beishto ul kriyachma. So now the Gemara says, no. When it says Sefach Bisharva, it means your own wife, and it's only talking about when you want to say Kriyachma. So now let's roll back again and say, what do we mean when we say Sefach Bisharva? Now, could we say that it's talking about, well, let's say, is it talking about the covered part of her body, uncovered part of her body?
It would clearly be talking about the covered part of her body.
It wouldn't be talking about the uncovered part of her body. What? If your wife's face is visible, so you can't say Kriyat Shema?
Maybe it's a distraction.
Why would that be?
Having the chitzah ensure, but we want to separate women from that.
Well, then why specify your wife? That would be true for anybody's wife. It's clear that if it's your wife, so then the only thing you could have possibly been looking at is the covered parts of her body, which normally is okay, but when you want to say Kriyat Shema, it's not okay.
Were the women in these days Taliban dressed?
In these days? No, I don't think so.
No, I don't think they ever were.
I don't think so.
I don't understand.
In Egypt,
only in 2016.
In Egypt,
your wife fully clothed during Kriyat Shema, you can't do.
No, that's fine. No, fully clothed, for sure you can.
They're saying they're exposed.
So we're saying Tevach Ba'isha Erva is talking about your wife, but it's a covered part, clearly.
A part that's normally covered.
A part that's normally covered is uncovered, so as long, it sounds like it's saying, as long as it's more less than a Tevach, it's going to be okay. What does Rashi say? Im Tevach Magulaba Lo Yikra Kriyat Shema Kenegda. If there is a if a tefach of what's normally covered is revealed, then you're not allowed to read Kriyat Shema in that situation while you're facing your wife. Okay? If you turn around, then it's okay.
Yeah.
And what about to turn around. The machlokas about what happens if you close your eyes. That's a machlokas in the Achronim. It's better to turn around. If you're on the subway, it's good enough to close your eyes.
So it's not the presence of the tefach. It's you looking at the tefach. Also with
we talked about
Bnei Beito, I mean the girl and the boy 3 years old or 11 years old or whatever. It's not their presence, it's you
facing them.
How do we know this? Because we know it.
Because once you turn away you don't see it. They don't have to leave the room.
Of someone in the room that's naked doesn't disturb them.
Only them being visible.
Front of your
unlike for example, so'ah, right? Feces is, as long as you can smell it, it's a problem.
Yeah.
As long as you can smell it, it's a problem. But the presence of nakedness, as long as you're not facing it, is okay.
In fact, if you're tuchus, you can say Krishna. As clearly stated in...
That's the part we skipped, Simon. Okay. So that's talking about your wife and Shok Bisha Erva. Shinemar, Gale Shok Avri Narot. Uchtiv, Ktagel Ervatcha, Vagam Tire Cherpatcha. You shouldn't, those are considered Erva in the context of Kriyat Shema.
So does that mean we've accepted the previous?
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm reading the wrong Pesukim. Labishtol Kriyat Shema, there's no Pesukim to support that. Okay, now we're going to get to the big part. What do you say, Mayor?
So I said when we said Ela Bishtol Kriyat Shema.
That's Tefach Bisha Erva.
Does that mean we've accepted that before?
Yes, that's Tefach Bisha Erva. Now comes Rav Chisda. Amar Rav Chisda, three things. Shok Bisha Erva, Shnei Margalei Shok Avri Naro, Tuchtiv Tagel Avatcha Vagam Terech Avatcha. Amar Shmuel, Kol Bisha Erva, Shnei Marki Kolech Arev Umarech Nave. Amar Sheishet, Sear Bisha Erva, Shnei Mar Sarech Keeder Izin. All right, three statements about three different forms of Erva. Shok, which is the thigh, presumably, or some kind of leg, some kind of leg area. Shokber Beisha Erva, Shmuel's comment of Kol Beisha Erva, which is her voice. We'll get to there as well. Don't worry. And finally, Se'ar Beisha Erva, which we're not going to really talk about. Shneamar Sarech Ge'eder Izim. And these are three different statements by three different Amoras, which is interesting. That it's not the same person saying all three of them. I just find that interesting. We're gonna keep going for now, and we'll swing back at the end for that. Fair? Yeah, is that fair?
Did you find, looking at the sources, a connection between what they've said and the assumptions that they've made based on those psukim?
Yeah, I mean, erva, erva, erva.
Ki kolech, yeah, ki, now how about ki kolech arev v'maret nevin?
Arev, erva, arev is beautiful.
Kolech arev is tov v'nechmad according to the scholar yeah. there. Yeah. And yeah. kolech arev, according to Rashi, is referring to the Am Yisrael davening.
That's Shir Shirim Rashi, that's not going to help
yeah.
us. Seder,
but
according to that, the whole thing
Shirim.
Is a mashal. No, but Shir Shirim is on the literal
story.
Level about a man and a woman, but Rashi doesn't say that at all.
But
Rashi,
there's no sexual connotation in Kolech Arev.
Yes,
of course there is.
No, he's not. That's what Shmuel says. I'm asking.
But that's how Rashi explains Shmuel.
That's Rashi.
If you look at Rashi on the Pasuk,
because Rashi is giving you an allegorical interpretation of Shir Shirim.
Which is where Shmuel has taken this pasuk from, which is on the basis of which he's coming to this assumption.
Shmuel doesn't read this pasuk here and say, God finds the voice of Bnei Israel, you know, in some way intimately beautiful. That's not what's going on.
It's a pasuk. That's exactly.
You have lots of layers of ways to read Tanakh. This is one of the ways to read Tanakh. Rashi is an allegorical interpretation. You'll find other mafarshim using different interpretations, other allegories or other pshat level. Obviously, they're reading these psukim just like the way Shir Hashirim is read throughout Shas, not always talking about Bnei Israel and Hashem, but rather about a man and a woman.
The whole point is that that's tava. That's why it ends.
Of course,
kolech arev is not necessarily.
Think about it from this perspective, Simon.
Physical. It's all physical.
Yeah, but kolech arev is not physical.
But
yeah.
Simon,
mare nave is physical.
Why is kolech arev not physical? You mean because it's sound? Is that what you mean?
But just the commentaries in Shir Hashirim do not refer to kol arev, the word arev,
when
as having any sexual connotations. They do refer to lots of other things.
It is, it's
no
appealing. But it's compared to marech naveh. It's all in the same pasuk. That's good enough.
That doesn't mean
in other words,
it's the same.
It's
the
they are paired together.
Ki kolech arev. Arev is tov v'nechmad. Lomat zot, or mare naveh, that there is physical.
There's not going to be any.
Shmuel came before the sport. That's because a different interpretation.
And it's also because sound is not sexual. Obviously, sound is not sexual. It's what it leads to. Although I want to revisit that soon.
Okay, so, all right.
I want to revisit
all
that
right.
soon.
I wanted to wave that flag.
All right. Let's continue because we got a bunch more Gemara and then we'll eventually get to the source.
You'll see later. It's very important.
Amar Rabbi Chanina. So Rabbi Chanina comes out and says, "Ani ra'iti at Rabbi." This is, by the way, completely different direction. Ra'iti at Rabbi shatala tfilav. I saw Rabbi hang up his tefillin, like on a hook. So okay, that's interesting. The Gemara says, "Meitive." What kind of question is Meitive? Meitive is a question from a higher power. Hatola tefilav yitlu lo chayav. So Mishnah it says that if you hang up your tefillin, your life will be hanged. Right? Basically, it's not good.
Will be what?
Well, either hanged or hung. It's not clear. Darshei chamurot amru vayu chayecha tluim lecha mineged zeh hatola tefilav. That's where they get it from, the idea that it's not good. It's not good to hang up your tefillin. So how could Rebbe do such a thing? Look, Asha. Ha birutzuah, ha biktitza. No. Rebbe was hanging it, kind of placing the tefillin on the hook, and then the ritzuot were hanging down. The problem is if you hang it by the ritzuot, and then the tefillin is hanging out, that's bad. Or Vibait Ema, meaning, or if you would prefer to say another answer, Loshna Ritsua Veloshna Ktitsa Asur. You're not allowed to hang it by the straps, and you're also not allowed to hang it up and have the straps hang down. Vechitala Rabbi Bekista Tala. No, he did it in a bag. In other words, the tefillin were wrapped up, and they were in a bag, and he hung the bag like we all do. Ihachi Mailam Ema. If that's the case, then why do we even have to mention it? Why is he telling us, I saw Rabbi hang up his tefillin? What's the big deal? I might have thought that you could never do such a thing to a Sefer Torah, right? You wouldn't put a Sefer Torah in a bag and then hanging up on a hook. You would put a Sefer Torah b'chavod back in an Aron Kodesh. So maybe tefillin has the same status as a Sefer Torah. It must be placed nicely into a box or something like that. Kamashman lo. Tefillin is not the same status as a Sefer Torah. It can be hung on a hook.
Can I just ask one more thing?
Yeah.
The three pesukim.
Come on.
No, it's not going back to the.
Yeah.
Are these three pesukim to do with Kriyat Shema or not?
Good question. We're going to have to return to that.
I can understand.
So we'll have to get back to it.
There's a pause after the Kriya Shema, and then they're just going on Erevos and just talking generally about them.
We will get back to that. It's the Rebbe's stories now. He said, I saw Rebbe who was burping and sneezing and, sorry, what's Gihek? I forget.
Yawning,
yes, thank you. Yawning, burping, and sneezing while he was davening. The ruck, and he was spitting, umamashmish mevigdo, and he was kind of like playing with his clothing. He was trying to pick off fleas from his clothing. I don't think it was a comment about his hygiene. It was just saying that he was doing that while he was davening. He was kind of distracting. Umamashmish mevigdo. Aval lo ayamit atef. And when his talus, let's assume like what Rashi says, that when his talus was falling, he let it fall and he didn't stop it. All right, just random things about Rebbe Ali was davening, and we're going to examine each one.
They needed David.
So what happened over here? So the Gemara is going to say, one more, sorry. Ukshu mafahek ayaminiach yado al santeron. When he yawned, he put his hand on his mouth. Does that sound good or bad?
Sounds good to know.
Sounds good, right? But the Gemara says it's not good. It's haughty. On his chin. Well, I think it means like going like this. Rashi says shalot tir'eh p'tichat piv. The Gemara is going to assume that that's haughty, and that's not something you should do. All right, times change. So the Gemara says meitiveh. How could a Rebbe do this? Hamashmiya kolo b'tfilato hareze miktane amuna. How could Rebbe? Excuse me. This isn't about Rabbi. This is in general. That was for burping. Burping could be different from yawning. Miktane amana. This is. We're going to read a list of things that are bad. Not all of them are related to Rabbi. It doesn't say anything about Rabbi doing this. Miktane amuna dehamagbia kolo betfilato. Somebody who raises his voice while he's davening, right? Raises the volume of his voice while he's davening. He's a person who is small in his emunah. Standard interpretation of this, Rashi says, because he's pretending that ki'ilu ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu shomea tefilat lachash u'magbia harbe. It's talking specifically about the
Shmita. We're talking about
Amidah. Because he's supposed to be personally talking to Hashem, and raising his voice implies that, Hashem can't hear me if I am quiet. All right, that's what that statement means.
But isn't it a lacha for you, the person saying it, they're supposed to actually hear the words that they're saying? This is why he might be saying it like that?
Yeah, but that's not what
they're
referring to.
Well, okay. No, I'm saying. No, I agree with you. It's annoying.
His neighbor may not.
No, I agree with you. Mm-hmm. It's my pet peeve. Mm-hmm.
So then it continues. It says, Hamagbia kolo betfilato. If you really raise your voice, hareza nevia is sheker. And it says you're like a navi sheker because it's really 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 bad that you're doing that. You're really implying that Hashem can't hear you. Megayek umefayek while you're davening hareza migase aruach. This is crude. The person who does this is not befitting a Jew while he's davening. Hamit atesh betfilato. Person who sneezes while davening siman ralo. It's a bad sign for him.
That's
why we say
that.
Siman Rala. Hold on.
If you can't help it.
Good question, David. And some say that if you sneeze, it's clear that you're also a crude person. Alright? If you spit while you're davening Shmon Esrei, it's like you spit in front of the king. So that's the statement that's going to be the problem, because a lot of these things are the things that Rebbe did. So bishlama magayik umafayik lokasha. So we can get rid of the magayik umafayik right away with the problem of the burping and the yawning. Kan lon so kan lutzono. As David pointed out, sometimes you burp and you yawn on purpose, and sometimes you burp and you yawn by accident, right? If you do it on purpose, then it's not appropriate. If you do it by accident, then it's fine. I had a Rebbe, I won't say what stage in my life, he burped every time he davened Shmoneh Esrei. Every time. It was really, I don't know if I was the only one who noticed it, but like every time I was standing next to him, always burped.
Are you putting this on YU?
Yeah, I'm not going to say where it was. I'm not going to say who it was.
So if you listen to
I'm certain that it was by accident. I don't think he was doing it on purpose. I just noticed him. And you know what? Baruch Hashem, because every time he did it, it's not necessarily good that I was doing this during Shmoneh Esrei, but every time he did it, what did I think? Brachos, kaf dalet amud beis. That's what I did every single time he burped. Just like I think of the, just like I think of the, just like I think of the eighth parak of Brachos, when somebody sneezes in the base Medrash, and there's a machlokas about whether or not you should say bless you or not. But either way, so it says it's fine to burp or sneeze, burp or yawn while you're davening Shmoneh Esrei, as long as it's by accident. But elamit atesh, you can't. There's no such thing as sneezing by accident, sneezing on purpose. So that's not true. I can sneeze on purpose.
Can you?
I can if I look at the light.
Wow.
Oh. There's a lot of people. Are you kidding? It's a thing. If you look at the sun the most, if I look at the sun, not always, but the first time, you know, for the first few times, if I look at the sun, it makes me sneeze. Also, I used to do it at lunch, on Shabbos lunch to impress my family. If I stare at this light right now, I will probably sneeze within about 10 seconds.
Wow.
Not doing it right now because my eyes will also hurt afterwards.
Prove it.
The man doesn't believe you either.
I'm not going to do it right now.
You are very, very talented.
No, there's a lot of my son also. He sneezes.
I can do that.
I don't understand. Okay. Is there no one here that when you go outside on a sunny day and you look up, you don't sneeze?
Sometimes.
Nobody here? It doesn't happen to anybody? It's very common.
First thing in the morning.
It's very common.
Maybe
in America.
No,
really not that.
No, it is. Google it. Google it. Google it. It's very common.
It's very common.
It's very
common.
It's true. They have sun.
Fair enough. So, anyways, so the Gemara though assumes you can't. So the Gemara assumes that you're not sneezing, but you're not sneezing on purpose, right? So we have to come up with a different solution for that one.
When I hand out snuff in shul, then people sneeze.
Oh, there you go. It's something similar to that. So amitatesh. What about sneezing? Rabbi used to sneeze during Shmoneh Esrei. Is that a siman ralo? Kasha. All right. You ready for this one? Mitatesh, amitatesh. Nami lo kasha. Kan mi lamala. Kan mi lamata. The second sneezing is not talking about sneezing. It's talking about flatulating, right? It's not talking about. It's not talking about sneezing upstairs. It's talking about sneezing downstairs. Da'amar of Zera. Da'amar of Zera. Hamilta of La'ali Beirav Hamnuna Vitakilali Kuli Talmudai. Now
you'll be interested. You'll be happy to know that it only affects Americans.
Are you being serious?
That's 18 to 35% of.
Are you being serious?
What? 18 to 35% of U.S. population.
Of U.S. What?
But it doesn't say about other countries.
Are you being serious?
Maybe some other countries too, though.
I get points for that, surely.
Are you like jealous or something?
That's not biologically. It doesn't work.
I couldn't make that up.
Why is that? And who the hell?
All right. Sarah Ian. Sarah Ian.
Now we know you're American. Now we know.
And we're proud of it. Therefore.
Wow.
Interesting.
Okay.
Interesting.
I edited Wikipedia.
No, it's genetic.
Okay, shall we? So the Gemara says, yeah, okay, so that's if you sneeze versus if you flatulate. That flatulate is not something you should be doing during davening, but sneezing is fine. And not only is it fine, Da'amar of Zera Hamilta Evla Li Beir of Hamnuna V'takili Li Kikuli Talmudai Hamit Atesh B'Tfilato Siman Yafelo. Rabbi Zera says, I was very, very happy when I learned that if you sneeze during davening, it's actually a very good siman. Don't misunderstand the Gemara. What it means is that when you sneeze below, meaning sneeze on this earth, so then havit atesh milamala means something good, wind goes around well for you in olam haba. It's a good sign to be sneezing during davening. I will be looking at the sun during davening very often.
That's why you don't say libriyut to a person sneezing while he's learning Torah.
Well, that's actually Gemara at the end of Brachos. The Gemara says Beit Shammai says you don't sneeze, you don't say bless you during learning Torah because it's bittul Torah to say God bless you. That's what the Gemara says.
Because it was a good sneeze.
Right. No. Now it's assumed that that sneezing is
positive.
Good. So it's confusing how exactly that turned around because it used to be that sneezing was a bad sign.
That's why we say.
And that's why we say bless you. Yeah. But here, it's a good sign. Sneezing is a good sign.
So you shouldn't say
it. Exactly. Right, you shouldn't.
Ring a rose even for the whole thing.
No. Sneezing is a bad thing. It's much older.
No, that's about the
sneezing
black
is much older.
But the thing was that they would sneeze if they'd had something and they'd all fall down.
But then, that predated that though. Sneezing being bad was much older.
Yeah, so that's why people fall down.
That's true. I don't know if we're going to have time to get to that, but we might have something on the sheet for that.
In Denmark, actually, if you speak about something and somebody sneezes, it's considered an approval of what was just said.
Oh, okay. maybe that's connected to this.
Yeah. That's what I was assuming.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, let's finish up over here. Arok, what about the spitting thing? Rebbe used to spit. Kasha, arok nami lo kasha. Not a problem. Afshak the Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Yehuda, haya omed betfilah v'nizdam lo arok mavliyo betalito. If you know, have a lot of phlegm built up while you're davening, so you spit it into your clothing. Talito here, because they used to actually wear their talit. I don't think that you wouldn't do that into your talis gadol for sure now. That's a baggage shel tefillah. But into some clothing, if you have a handkerchief, whatever. Vim talit na'ehu, if your clothing is nice, so don't do that. Humavlioba farksuto, that's another piece of clothing. You're allowed, in other words, spitting per se is not a problem. Spitting outwardly, onto the floor or something like that, that's a problem.
What does it say, a focus is a handkerchief?
Fraksuto is turban. There you go. Your kippah. Ravina Abakai, this is a funny story. Ravina Abakai Achareder of Ashi, Ravinos. Standing behind Rav Ashi while davening, nizdamen lo rok. Rav Ashi had to spit. Patke lo acharei, he turned around and he spit. Amalei lo saver la mayla hadar Rav Yehuda mavliya bar pekisuto. You're supposed to spit into a turban, not onto me. Amalei, anna anina date. I don't like to spit on my clothes.
It's like the front window in the car when you spit in the bathroom.
Yeah. I'm delicate.
Anina date does not mean that's what I wanted to do. That's what I wanted to do.
Anina, delicate. What's the word? It's not onin. It's no, but it's a totally different word. What's that word? Istinis, but that's a totally different word. But no, anina date, probably Rashi even says. Rashi says anything? No, nothing. But it means a person is delicate. Like he doesn't.
I thought
he can't stand it.
Because that's what I wanted to do.
No. Okay. Let's do a little bit more. Hamashmiya kolo b'tfilato reza miktani emunah. Let's return to that. This idea of davening out loud. Amar avuna lo shanu ela shiyachol lechavenet libo b'lachash. That's only if you can have kavana when davening quietly. However, avol ein yachol lechavenet libo b'lachash mutar. But if you can't have kavana davening quietly, you have to vocalize it, then you're allowed to say it out loud. But that's only when you're davening by yourself, right? So Breslover in the forest is allowed to talk out loud. Now, it's not clear to me, though, that it's appropriate for him to be davening really loud, right? If he's saying Shmona Esrei, I don't think he should be shouting it even if he's in the forest.
No,
shouldn't be shouting Shmona Esrei.
Not Magbiah.
Exactly.
Shmiah.
Exactly. That's just in order to be able to hear yourself so that you can have Kavana. But shouting Shmona Esrei in the forest is I don't think is okay, because then you get to the Nevi'a Sheker problem. You're pretending Hashem can't hear you. They're not shouting Shmona Esrei in the forest anyways. They're shouting, what does he shout? In what's it called? In
Shrizen?
Lama? No, it's not Lama. What does he shout?
Tati a few times.
Yeah, and then he shouts something specific. He says, Mata otsemi meni! Mata otsemi meni! Anyways, that's okay. Okay. I think, yeah, there's more good stuff after that, but we'll stop there for now and give out these sheets. All right. We'll start at the top with the shok business. Some of you have sheets that are printed that make sense, and some of you have sheets that are printed that make no sense. I will help you out. In my perennial fights with the printer in the Beis Medrash, those of you who come to the Sunday night chabura know that I have a lot of trouble trying to print backwards and frontwards on the new printer. Anyways, so we'll start with shok. I think somebody asked before which part of the body is the shok, right? So let's start with that. So before we get to actually which part of the body, let's first of all, the Bach wonders, why does the Gemara even need to mention shok be isha erva? There's a lot of things that are Be'isha Erva. A lot of parts of our body are Erva. So the Bach says, Nira denakat shokta afilu pachot mitafach chashuv nami Erva. Right? The Gemara started by saying, tefach Be'isha Erva. So why mention any part of her body that's supposed to be covered, presumably, is going to be Erva? So he says, the point is that shok, even less than a tefach, is going to be Erva. Even a little bit. So this is the Bach's first attempt to understand what the chiddush is of shok be'isha erva. Pretty sensible, even less than a tefach. The Rashba says, no, maybe because you would not necessarily know that the shok is considered a part of the body that is supposed to be covered. This is attempt number two. Because by a man, short shorts is okay. Whatever part of the body that it's talking about, perhaps by a man, it's not covered. So it's the chiddush is that that part is supposed to be covered by a woman, which according to this theory, maybe tefach is still true. This is a second attempt. But then skip ahead. Ulfina yitati, this is the most interesting. Nira kavir lepshat kedaparishit. Sorry, he thinks that's pshat. The next one. Va'od nira ed ikr hadasvara. This is what he thinks is ikr. This is what I found is fascinating. The asvara mi bachutz hi. Svara mi bachutz means what I would have thought if I didn't have this. The ein lachush klal legilu hashok. That we wouldn't be worried about the shok, whatever it is. Ve'ein sarach lomar legilu haregel va'afilu be'ishit ish. It should be perfectly fine to look at a shok. Why? Because frankly, they're gross. Fascinating. The Bach suggests that the chiddush of shok b'isha erva is that I would have thought that the shok was fine because it's actually not attractive at all. That it doesn't carry any sexual desire at all because it's gross. Fascinating.
Not because the shock is gross, but because it's dirty. It's covered in dirt.
Yeah, because it's constantly dirty. But sweaty or whatever it is. But he's saying that's generally a part of the body that's not clean as opposed to the hands, which are clean. Fascinating. Just very, very interesting. But also fascinating because, okay, so Kamash Malan that what? Kamash Malan that despite the fact that it's not attractive, it's still considered erva. Which tells us something about erva, by the way. That it's not only about attractiveness.
It's something that apparently
it's a private part. It's a covered part. Even if seeing it won't arouse you, according to this line in the Bach, even if seeing it wouldn't arouse you, it would still be considered erva. Interesting.
From the woman's side or from the man's side?
For the man to see it. That's all we're talking about so far.
For the woman to cover. Okay.
Okay.
The issur is ifnei iver, by the way, or the issur is on the man?
For now, the issur is on the man. We're talking about the issur on the man. Is the man. For him to look at it. I don't want to talk about the issur on the woman to reveal it for now. He continues, by the way, and says, this makes sense in context because the other two are also things that you would not have expected to be erva. Kolech mareh. It's another thing that I wouldn't necessarily have expected to be considered erva. Se'ar b'isha erva, also another thing I wouldn't have expected to be erva. So he's saying the shok is something that I would not have expected to be erva. It's almost mukhrach, meaning if you don't say that, then they kind of don't go together. Shok b'isha erva is being compared to se'ar b'isha erva, which is being compared to kol b'isha erva. They seem very strange.
Is this part of the length?
We're going to get
there. But as you say, each one is a different amor.
They are each different amoras.
Inachinami.
And then it could be teaching the first thing that even less than a tefach is erva. The Tzlach completely disagrees with the Bach. He says near the Sfilah the Rashi Hainu b'mistakel v'nitkaven k'dei lihanot b'mena. Basically, he's going to say that no. Most of the parts of the body, it's only usur when you stare at it in order to get hana'a. But the shok and thing and parts of the body like the shok that are normally covered, even if you're not trying to get hana from it, it's still going to be usur. It's actually kind of along the lines of the Bach, but he doesn't think that it's disgusting. He just thinks that those parts of the body can't be looked at even when you're not trying to get hana from it. That's the last line. Avos shok shenikra erva asur afilu enu mitkaven lehanot. Okay? All right. Now, where is the shok? So I recorded for you here the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah says, The hands and the feet, which are normally revealed, from the ankles to the shok. So what's the shok? The knee. Right? So, until the knee, right? So, from the knee and up, that's considered the shok, that's the thigh.
Is this the basis of, like, people today saying that women should wear skirts up until their knee?
That it should cover the knee when they are sitting, yes. That it should cover the knee at all times, even when they're sitting.
This is the source.
100%. The Chazon Ish disagrees.
So, under the knee down... is,
fine.
According to this, is never, it's not something you need to cover.
Right, because we're rugged to it. If you lived, the Chafetz Chaim leaves open the situation where if you lived in a society where it was covered from a custom perspective, then it would be considered erva because you're not rugged to it. Objective erva, according to the Chazon Ish, starts at the knee.
That's very interesting because during Victorian times, women had to wear...
All the way down
to the ankles.
Yeah.
And how about if you live in the times that we live in, where it's very normal for women to wear skirts, which are way above the knee?
That's why we have a pasuk in Navi that says shok be'isha erva. No, that's objective erva.
Hold on, the definition of shok here
is according to the Chafetz Chaim is the knee.
But then it has a stipulation that because we're regular and hero.
No, that's from below the knee.
The issue of hero.
That's below the
Yes. That's below the knee.
It's below the knee. Which is based on custom according to the Chafetz Chaim. No. The Chazon Ish disagrees with the Chafetz Chaim and says it means the ankle. He says it means the ankle, so in Bnei Brak, that's how they paskin, that the woman has to cover the ankles. What's unclear to me is that it appears that for whatever reason, between the ankle and the knee, it's good enough to just wear stockings. Yeah. Meaning it's to hide the skin. That's all you have to do.
Yeah, they have to wear it tight.
Like nobody would say that, nobody I know says that that's okay from the knee and above. But for some reason that's okay from the ankle to the knee, Zeta. Okay, no, you just have to hide the skin.
Because what you used to.
But the Chazon Ish thinks that the shok is the ankle.
But in Borough Park they don't go around with stockings.
What do they go around with?
Just bare.
What?
There's no minhag to wear stockings.
Why what do they wear?
Which part's
they wear the skirt under the knee. No, the knee down to the ankle.
I know, but I'm saying in many places where they're makbid to cover, they're makbid to cover.
That's not. I'm not. You're saying no with the hip. How do you know that?
What are you referring to, a Haredi?
Yes.
Borough Park, Chassidish.
What are you talking about?
Chassidish.
I'm wondering why. Okay. You think that they don't wear stockings?
No,
it's
well,
in Crown Heights,
you have to wear stockings.
I know that.
No,
Borough
Park, Munchie,
Wollongong.
It definitely
shifts.
Borough
Park,
Borough Park,
first of all, it has nothing to do with Hinduism. It's just something.
Okay.
It's someone invented.
No, the stockings is based on the Chazon Ish, but for some reason they think it's okay to just hide the skin, which, fine, Seder. I'm just noticing that. For some reason,
so you're saying that way, they that say below they should the be knee. Able to wear a skirt. Look a bit closer.
What?
By that definition, they should be able to wear a skirt above the knee if they've got thick stockings on.
They should.
That logic.
No, I feel
like you're saying.
Stockings above the
knee. No, I'm saying we should pick. In theory, we should pick one or the other. Either you say that it goes to the ankle, in which case you have to wear a skirt to the ankle and never reveal anything above the ankle, which is very difficult. What? No, I'm saying. But I'm saying if this from the knee down is erva, so why don't you have to completely cover?
It's an acknowledgement of being a chumrah, basically.
Say it, maybe.
It's a way acknowledging it's a chumrah.
Maybe.
Down to the knee,
which,
everyone.
Which, by the way, the Chafetz Chaim would probably say that if you walk around in Bnei Brak, you should wear stockings.
Yep. Right. But maybe thick stockings are okay. So
maybe.
They are from the knee down, but not from the knee up.
Yeah, but just to, yeah, they don't.
Yeah, it's okay to hold from the knee down, otherwise wide open the knee up.
That's my question. But nobody says
it. No, when it says Hibutari called Kenegdo,
yeah, because that's the context.
Only to do with Kriyashma.
That's the because it's in Ayin Hay in Orach Chaim. He's talking about Kriyashma.
Okay, so does that mean that when they're not reading Kriyashma, there's nothing wrong with going around with legs which aren't covered up to the knee, down to the knee? This is only referring to Kriyashma.
No, because it's still erva. It's still erva. It's still going to be erva. That which way it goes. Let me put it this way: we're part of the work that we're going to have to do is figure out if there is a distinction, which you're jumping the gun here, between what's erva and what you're allowed to read Kriyat Shema to. So we have to figure out which one is more chumra than the other. In other words, can you do A when B is usher? We have to figure that out. So that's enough about shuk. Let's get to the kol b'isha erva. All right? Now, before we start, I just want to say that there are three possibilities that I can see about how we can even understand, just at a basic level, and maybe this will be borne out through the postgame, what is the isher of kol isha? Meaning, why is there an isher of kol isha? So the three that I can think of are as follows. One is that kol isha is an erva b'fni atzmo, meaning, ignore everything else, kol isha is the same thing as hearing the woman's voice, in whatever context that we're talking about, is the same thing as looking at a normally covered part of her body. It is itself erva, and it stands alone as an independent problem. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that it's only erva in the sense that it leads you to hear her in. It leads you to thoughts about the woman, which that's the real iser, and the kol is kind of just, it triggers it. It's its own iser, but only because it leads you to something more real, more substantive.
The nafkamina of that is that if the voice doesn't lead you to hear, then it wouldn't be asa.
That would be a potential nafkamina. Perhaps there are other nafkaminas. And then the third one is that it's actually the voice will lead you to engaging in some kind of sexual act, right? So it's ati li dei erva. It will cause you to do something with the woman who's singing, for example.
What's the difference between one and three?
You want me to give a nafkamina?
Yeah.
It's easy. What if you are watching the opera?
Yeah.
And you see a woman singing, and you are in the nosebleed seats. I know you guys don't know what the nosebleed seats are. Yeah. But you're all the way at the top.
The gods.
Yes? So you're all, what are they? The gods?
The gods.
Wow. Blasphemers. So what if you're in the god seats, right? And there's no way, you're nowhere near her, but it's arousing, right? So if it's from the perspective of having urim, so you have urim. But if it's from the perspective of actually doing something with the woman, it's not going to happen. She's all the way over there and she's going home and you're not going to be anywhere near her. It's not going to happen. What?
That's two.
No, nafkamina between two and three. Nafkamina between two.
No,
and three.
I asked between one and three, not two and three.
Between one and three?
Yeah, they seem to be the same thing.
Oh, that's also somewhat easy. If it's an erva b'fnei atzmo, right? So then, when I say erva b'fnei atzmo, I mean objective erva. I mean it doesn't matter how she sounds. It doesn't matter how she sounds. It's erva. It's the same as seeing her.
One and three are the same. If it causes hero,
no. If it's erva b'fnei atzmo, so then it doesn't matter what she sounds like. It's the same thing as looking at. It's the same thing as looking at her thigh.
Right.
It doesn't matter whether she sounds terrible or she sounds good, because it's an erva b'fnei atzmo. In fact, it doesn't even matter if you can see her.
Yeah.
Okay. So, keeping that in mind, let's start with the Rashba. So the Rashba is going to bring in another Gemara for us. Hadamar b'yitzak tefach b'yishe erva v'okim na b'yishto u'b'kriyat shema pirush ha'rai v'tzal. So the Rashba says, well, of course, the Ravid, but we're going to skip that part. Ava panei yadeh v'raglev v'kol dvora she'eno zemer. So what about a woman's hands and feet? No problem. What about kol dvora she'eno zemer, when dvora was speaking, but not when she was singing? V'se'arach michutz letzimta, or hair that is in some way permitted, she'eno mitkaseh, en choshishin lehem, mivnei shu ragil ben v'lo tarid. We don't worry about that because a person is used to it. In other words, the part that I want to focus on for now, her speaking voice, not her singing voice, is no problem.
One. What? So it's not number one.
Hold on. No. All we're saying now is her speaking voice. I'm just, Rashba is making a distinction between singing and speaking. He's saying speaking is not going to be a problem at all. Speaking is the same thing as looking at her hands and her feet.
How does he explain the Gemara Kedushin?
So, b'isha acheret, asur listakel b'shum makom, b'afilu b'aspektano, u'basara, v'asur lishma, afilu kol dvara, k'damrinan b'kedushin. So he says the Gemara in Kedushin, is talking about when you're listening to another woman. Okay, so now we have to figure this out. So what is he saying? So he's suggesting that when we say that non-singing voice is mutter, you know who he's talking about? Talking about your wife, as opposed to her singing, which is going to be asur, which means that the Rashba is assuming that our Gemara, what's the question that our Gemara is dealing with? It's not talking about erva in general. It's talking about whether or not you're allowed to say kriyat shema. So when it says shok b'isha erva, when it says kol b'isha erva, when it says se'ar b'isha erva, it's all talking about your wife.
But the Gemara in Kedushin,
and it's talking about kriyat shema.
The Gemara in Kedushin is talking about Yelda, who's the
Exactly, Simon. Hold on. You got to hold on. So when our Gemara says these three things, it's talking about your wife for Kriyat Shema, which is makes sense because in context it makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. All right, it's going to cause problems for you at home, but in theory it makes perfect sense. But the Rashba notices that there's a Gemara Gentushin that we didn't talk about, where there's a dispute. It's kind of like it's really not a good way to say it. I would say in a crude way, but I'm not going to. Basically, kind of an argument between Rav Nachman and Rabbi Yehuda. Everything Rav Nachman says, Rabbi Yehuda knocks him down. And at some point, Rav Nachman says, you know, you should say hello to my wife. Not clear why he says that. But Rabbi Yehuda says, Kol Isha Erva.
Can't do that.
Can't do that, right? And what does he mean by that? What does he mean by that? What does he mean by that? So the Rashba says, I mean, it doesn't sound like they're talking about singing, so what does that mean?
It's just speaking.
So it's a very strange comment made by Rabbi Yehuda, but the Rashba says we have to contend with it. So the Rashba ends up saying, oh, that's because Kol Isha Erva, actually, another woman's voice, even her speaking voice, in theory, is Erva for Kriyat Shema.
No.
That's what he's suggesting.
Who is?
Yeah, that's what the Rashba is saying. Azroli Shema Afilu Kol Dvara Knamrina Bekidushin. Hold on. You're right, maybe he's not talking about Kriyat Shema, but hold on. Lishta Amar Shlomo Liyalta Amar Lihachi Amar Shmo Kol Beisha Erva. But then he says, Elamiu Nira Dedavka Koshal Shelat Shalom or Bashavat Shalom. Ki Hatam Deika Kir of Dad. But then he says, he pulls back and he says, it's hard to believe that any reading of the Gemara and Kedushin could reveal that hearing another woman speaking is going to be erva. Presumably, it's some kind of shelat shalom, which I think what he means by that is some kind of flirtatious talk. I think he means kind of...
He said it was about sending her. It wasn't even about him hearing her directly, was it?
Yes, which is why I think it's flirtatious.
First stage was that he wanted to be able to say it directly to his wife, and then he said, no, my colleague said erva, and then he said to him, how about via me? And he said, even via you would be also. And Rashi says the reason why via you would be also because the problem here is not so much the voice. The problem here is to get close, is building a relationship.
Exactly. Shalom. So you should be aware that the Rashba understands that Gemara is talking about specifically Hashabbat Shalom, 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 which is
woman.
Some kind of talk with a woman that is intimate in nature. You should also know that some of the major achronim, like the Yamshel Shlomo, which we'll see later, basically dismiss the Gemara. They say Rabbi Yehuda was just messing with Rabbi Nachman. It wasn't real. He was trying to. They were kibitzing with each other, and you shouldn't take Rabbi Yehuda so seriously. That's what I'm not making that up. The Yamshel Shlomo says. The Marshal says that
he had a
subpoena
in his pocket that he was trying to give to.
So that's the Rashba over here. So the Rashba is obviously clearly in the camp that our Gemara is a Kriyat Shema Gemara, Sukya. It's talking about what you're not allowed to say Kriyat Shema in front of your wife. Now, what would that mean
in
general? The Gemara in Brachos, yes. What would that mean for the other cases, for cases of where it's another woman and it's not Kriyat Shema?
By the way, doesn't matter if she's married or not married, that doesn't matter. Any other woman.
Well, it does matter.
No, Rashba says our Gemara is talking about your wife.
No. As opposed to another woman, another married woman, or any other woman.
If it's if your wife is a problem, for sure everybody else
it's
is a problem. Kriya Shema.
If it's a
but we can't learn it from here. We don't know what's.
Well, we either don't know, or we either don't know, or we'd say clearly, if Kriya Shema is a problem with your own wife, then why is that a problem? Because it's erva. So obviously, you're not allowed to look at the erva of another woman. So. Kol Shekin, right? You would say something along those lines.
Unless if it's not the time of Kriyat Shema, then it might be irrelevant the degree to which some other woman there's an erva or not.
Unless it's asur to be mistakel benashim.
Unless the Gemara in Brachos is not.
But that's, we're not learning that from this.
No.
You can't necessarily.
You can't learn it from here unless you do some kind of Kal Vachomer to say.
You can't learn it here from Kedushin, and you can't necessarily learn it from the Gemara in Brachos because the Gemara in Brachos isn't necessarily talking about Kol Erva when it comes to Kriyat Shema.
Okay, so the Mordechai says, the Mordechai is also in that camp. Mordechai says, Uperish Rav Haigon, the Kol Vahani Lenin Kriyat Shema, say this is all talking about Kriyat Shema, and he quotes other ones. Kazavah Rav Elazar Rimetz. Hilkach asur lomar davar shebekdusha b'shmiat kol shir shel isha. You're not allowed to say a davar shebekdusha when you're listening to music being sung by a woman.
Didn't you quote him on Shabbos?
I did. Ubavonoteinu beina ovdei kokavim anuyosh. This is an amazing line. We are now amongst the non-Jews and they're all singing. So what are we going to do? Veit lasad l'Hashem eper tartacha. Hilkach einan nisharin milomod b'shmiat kol shir nashim armaot. Therefore, we have to say that you're still allowed to daven, you're still allowed to say Kriyat Shema, even if you're listening, even if you can hear the songs of the non-Jewish women. This is planting the seeds for something that we're going to see later. V'kach perish Bahag, v'kach perish Rabbi Chananel, k'divrei Rav Haigon, v'katav Rav Yah. Now I put the Rav Yah on the sheet because this is even more. This is even more amazing.
But you're missing part of the Mordechai. You haven't put it all in here.
I didn't put in the Rav Yah because no, I put the Rav Yah right next. There's nothing else.
All of the Mordechai. There's part of the Mordechai which has enough gemina which means that you shouldn't put yourself into a b'dievet situation, which is the words are missing here. But anyway, okay. There's more of the Mordechai which is not written here.
If it's not before, then it's not going to be there.
But yes,
so the Rav Yah, what?
So what's the Mordechai? Is he saying, because when we daven in shul, there's always women singing around, therefore there's just no way to avoid it? Or are we saying because we're used
he
to
he wasn't talking about that. No, he wasn't talking about... Oh, you mean... You don't mean the women in shul. You mean stam women.
I see that's what he means, right?
Yeah, he means when you're davening in shul, I don't know if he's talking about in shul, because he probably wouldn't hear them in shul. But if you're like, you know, if you're davening anywhere, if you're davening in a public place and there are women singing, so he says you're allowed to daven Kriyat Shema there.
But because we're so used to it.
Well, here he says... Here he says because Eit Lasod LaHashem. The Rav Yah, though, that's the next source I put in separately. That's when, because we're not used to seeing these things. But that's why a single girl who doesn't normally cover her hair, we don't worry about saying Kriyat Shema in front of her. And so too with her voice, which she does, she tends to sing. But kol lekel edmi litzah ba'ashishish muta lekor kriyat shma kenegda. But don't compare kol to feces. That sounds great. Da'acha kol shu erva galoi ela she'ina ayin shalatet bolirot v'dami litzah megula lifnei suma ken nearly. What he's saying over there is that when it comes to tzoah, if you just put it behind a glass cage, so then it's fine because you won't be able to smell it anymore. But you'll be able to daven Kriyat Shema in front of it. In other words, being in the presence of the tzoah, being able to see it, is not a problem as long as you can't smell it. But a song, kol shuha erva galui el she'ein ayin shalatet, but you can't see it. That doesn't mean that it's allowed. I mean, it goes without saying. It kol is something that you can't see. But what he is saying is that what he is implying is that the woman's presence seems to be almost irrelevant. What he seems to be dealing with is, what happens if there's a woman in another room and you can hear her voice? So does that mean that because she's in the other room, it's okay? Or since her voice is in the room with you, it's not okay? And he sounds like he's saying the latter, which means it's disembodied, right? And it's irrelevant what you can see.
Why the distinction between a betula and a married woman?
That is one of the great mysteries of life.
Yeah. Why? No, Rav Yah specifically.
She's Mutelecha. Because she's Mutelecha.
I've said her.
No.
So that means it's. That means. So that.
No.
Yeah, but you're not.
The example
doesn't matter.
The example they're giving is hair.
So is your wife.
With hair, one second.
So is your wife.
The example they're giving here is with hair, and they're saying that because of Asulas, i.e., young girls walk around with uncovered hair. If you see a young girl with uncovered hair, it's normal for you. Therefore, Zelo Selecha Yehu.
But Meir is saying, from a rational perspective, what's the difference between a single girl and a married girl with regards to her hair?
That's
what Mordechai is saying.
From a Hebrew perspective, I've never understood it. From an Arab perspective, it's understandable. Meaning, if Erva is something technical and objective.
No, but not for the coal. That makes no sense.
That's for the hair, not
exactly.
For the
coal. The coal as well. I tell you what, you can't hear the difference. It's from the halacha point of view, is that a married woman is osiracha and a basula is mutaracha, and therefore the hero wouldn't lead to
But Simon, call the isha with your wife is usher. Is not usher, is you're not allowed to say Kriyat Shema. That's what he's reading into the Gemara. And she's mutarat lecha. Is irrelevant.
The Rosh and the Rambam.
Stop bringing in other things. We're reading the Rav Yah. We're reading the Rav Yah and we're reading the Mordechai.
The Rav Yah ignores that.
So what you said is not right, because it doesn't matter if she's mutarat lecha.
Forget mutarat lecha. The Regilos. Yes. The Regilos part. He asked about that. The Regilos, they are used to being exposed to those
and
things.
And I'm used to being exposed to my wife singing.
And it's still
but
if you were exposed to all the girls in the shul singing, you wouldn't be aroused by it. Therefore, it's okay because you're regular.
But I am regular to my wife singing, and it's still I'm still not allowed to say Kriyat Shema to it.
They say that you can't say Kriyat Shema. They say that you can because
the Gemara says, and that's how they read it. They read that the whole Gemara
says that you can because it's lasos, and therefore because you're
That's what the Mordechai says about Eis Lasot Hashem. But that's not what the Rav Yoh is talking about. The Rav Yoh says that the reason it's okay is because you're ragil to it.
Yes.
And then he makes a distinction between a betula and a non-betula, which is hard to understand.
Yeah,
because why are you more ragil with regards to a voice? If it's about being ragil to it, so it's difficult to understand why, unless he says that for your wife it's also okay.
Yes,
he just doesn't say it.
He does.
But he doesn't say that.
Why doesn't?
Doesn't say it.
Doesn't talk. He's not talking about.
Doesn't
Hashem
talk about.
Hashem.
He's talking about a pnuya. That's what he's talking about over there. Betula. It could be that it does extend to his wife.
Yeah.
In which case, it's by a woman by woman basis. Maybe.
What I remember, Mordechai and the Ravir both allow you to read it in front of your wife.
You don't have to remember anything. They're sitting right in front of you.
Yeah, but there isn't all of them here.
Anyways, so now who disagrees? So the Rush completely disagrees. The Rush says. Amr of Chesed quotes the Gemara, and then in the last line he says, "Perish lishma'a velo leinyan kriat shma." And there's a whole cadre of Rishonim that understand like the Rush. I didn't bring them all. He is the father of them all, though. He says the whole Gemara is talking about in general status. It's not talking about kriat shma at all. He's saying this is asur for you to see a married woman's. Shok or Sear or to hear her voice, nothing to do with Kriyat Shema. These are just general statements that are being.
And your wife, he's not talking about this.
No.
Wife?
No.
In other words, you would be allowed, according to the Rush, 100% you're allowed to read Kriyat Shema in front of your wife's hair or when she's singing, or even if you're. You are. You are.
It's only because he's concerned that if you're concerned about reading Kriyat Shema in front of your wife, you may come not to read it. He doesn't like it. The Rosh says the only reason that they allowed you to be able to read Kriyat Shema in front of your wife is that you may come to get into a situation where you won't say Kriyat Shema. That's why both the Rosh.
That's, is that the Rosh here? Because it's not
the Rosh in Brachos.
This is the Rosh in Brachos.
Yeah, but the Rosh in Brachos says that.
This is the Rosh in Brachos.
Rabbeinu Asher is the Rosh.
Yeah.
So that's what the Rosh says. Yeah.
But
it's not all here.
No, everything that he says is here. It could be that there's a Tosfos Rosh like that, which is also him. That could be, but
that's
I don't think that
he says.
That's
he says
that. I've got the Rush in front of us right here. It's everything.
Advertise what you're going to be covering in the next year, so we can't do this anymore.
It's right there. It's everything. There's nothing else in the Rush over there.
Do you have a Gemara here? Gemara brachas.
Safari, yeah. Look it up in Safari.
Do you have a normal Gemara brachas?
I think
like
it is.
Safari,
yeah.
Look it up
in
Safari. It doesn't have it. You need a Gemara with a Rush in the back. Do you have one? Is there a Gemara in Rush Meifah?
Most Gemaras have.
Do you have a Gemara? Like a normal one, not Shulchan Aruch?
Yeah, I have only a normal one.
Do you have a Gemara Brachas?
I do.
Is it book cover?
Well, okay, we're going to continue for now. We're going
to
continue for now. So if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Evin HaEzer, so there's two places to look in Shulchan Aruch now. Now that we know that there's this kind of divergence between the Rishonim about how to read our Gemara, you have to look in two places. Where do you have to look? Which two places do you have to look in Shulchan Aruch? You have to look in Evin HaEzer for the halachos of general tzniut, and then you have to look in Aruch Chaim for the halachos about Kriyat Shema. And it's recorded in both places. So in Evin HaEzer, this famous line, Chaf Aleph in Evin HaEzer, Tzorich Adam Litrachek Mi Anashim Ma'od Ma'od, person is very careful about women, Ma'od Ma'od, La'mistakel Afil Be'espektana Shal Yishav Nitkabin Le'enot Mimena, Kilu Nistakel Be'Beit HaTorah. If you look even at an Espektana, that's a problem. Va'asur Lishma Kol Erva Olirot Sa'ara. Outside the context of Kriyat Shema, it's usher to hear her voice or to see her se'ar. Meaning it's an isidur abanan ve'elu advarim asurim gam b'chayevi lavin. But he says actually these things are also part of lavin in general because they could be considered gilei arayot. Okay?
So,
yeah,
say the kavanah. The kavanah le'enot misa. No, then you get makat mardut. He says it's asur lishma bichlal, but if you're mitkaven, then you get makat mardut. Right? In other words, it won't rise to the level of because that's the extra level. Yeah. Okay. Now, whose position is he taking? Not exactly clear. He's taking at least the Rush's position, at least for sure the Rush's position. What the other Rishonim's position is not clear. I lean towards saying that they definitely agree with the Rush about what he said as well. In other words, if it's asur to read Kriyat Shema in front of your wife while her hair is revealed, then why would it be okay to look at a married woman's hair? Like why would you make a distinction between the two of them? Now the Beit Shmuel on the Shulchan Aruch says, "Aval kol pnuya o kol ishto mutar, ele beit tefila asur." So he says, basically going along the lines of what we expected, except not like the Rush, that kol pnuya or kol ishto, basically like the ravya almost, that the voice of a single girl or even of your wife is mutar in general, but not during Kriyat Shema. So not like the Rush, because the Rush wouldn't have said this. And that's what he says is recorded in Or HaChaim. Vayin b'prisha b'shem Maharshal, this is what I was telling you about, v'dafka kol erva asura v'kol dibur shel mutar. According to the Maharshal,
this...
No, not Beit Tefillah, because vein lomar mishas kedushin deita sham kol erva afilu b'shelat shalom asur tiritz rashba kol dibur ma'u meishiv al shelat shloma garat fe. Because what's he dealing with? The Maharshal is trying to deal, he's trying to contend with the Gemara in Kedushin that says that Rabbi Nachman said to Rabbi Yehuda, Rav Nachman, you can't say hello to my wife. You can't send Shelat Shalom to my wife because that's going to be a problem called Isha Erva. That's not during Kriyat Shema, clearly. So
that's someone else's wife.
Yes.
If we talk about Pnuya or Ishto.
Well, then obviously you're allowed to talk to your wife. You don't need the Maharshal to tell you that you're allowed to talk to your wife. You need the Maharshal to tell you that the Gemara in Kedushin that says Kol B'Isha Erva when it comes to talking to another person's wife is not really a problem when you're talking about only Dibor. Okay?
Not to her, just hearing her voice.
That's the Kol, yeah.
No, because talking to her is something else. You can't hear her speak because of Shilat Shalom.
That's what we're talking, right?
Hearing someone... Hearing
her voice is okay. That's what the Maharshal is saying, against the simple reading of the Gemara in Kedushin.
Okay.
Right? Okay. Now, as usual, I put in the Shulchan Aruch so we can kind of go step by step. Did I skip? No, I didn't. Good. Okay. As usual, I put in the Shulchan Aruch so we can go step by step and see how much we learned. So the Rav Yosef Karo, Tefach Magula B'Yisha B'Makom Shedarka L'Chsoto Afilu Yishto Asur Likot Kriyat Shema Kenegda. Okay? Basically, not taking the Rush's view. Taking the view of the other Rishonim that say that when it comes to Tefach B'Yisha Erva, it's even your wife, and you're not allowed to read Kriyat Shema as long as there's a Tefach B'Yisha that's supposed to be covered. V'Yish Amrim, the Ramah says, Dafka B'Yishto Aval B'Yisha Acheret Afilu Pachat Mitefach Avi Erva Hagot Maimoni. And he says, but from the Rush, it sounds like tefach beisha erva is even by another woman. When there's another woman, but what about a woman reading by herself? When she's reading by herself, yachol ikrot afapisha iramo, even if she's naked. Okay, fine. Well, that's not relevant to us right now. Bet se'ar shel isha shedarka lechsoto asur likrot kenegdo. When it comes to se'ar, you're not allowed to read Kriyat Shema keneged the se'ar, and the Rama jumps in afilu ishto, again against the Rush. Aval betulot shedarkan lelech perot harosh mutar ravya. So that's why we're allowed to read Kriyat Shema. That's why all single girls walk around without covering their hair. And the Ramah jumps in, V'u'adin ha'sarot shal nashim sh'regila latzayt b'chutz tzimtan, women who wear their hair in a certain way, v'kol shekin se'ar nochrit afilu darka lechsoto, hagot afasi chadashim. You don't have to worry about non-Jewish women. Any women who are normally not covering their hair, you don't have to worry about that in terms of Kriyat Shema. The Aruch HaShulchan used this to explain how we're allowed to daven in shul nowadays. Because most women, a lot of women nowadays, and even during his time in Lithuania, they, even though they should be covering their hair, he says, we've been yelling at them to cover their hair, but they don't. You can still read Kriyat Shema even if you can see their hair, because you're used to it. Okay. Yesh li zaher mishmiat kol zemer isha b'shat Kriyat Shema. This is very interesting, because yesh li zaher is very different from asur. Right? Yesh li zaher mishmiat kol
zemer.
Because Zemer...
Speaking.
Yeah, yeah.
Not even speaking. No, not speaking.
Speaking for sure is okay. Yeah, that we're not surprised about. And then, v'afilu b'ishto, ava kol haragil bo, eino erva. Presumably, if you're not used to your wife singing, so then that's a problem. But if you are used to your wife singing, then it's okay. Ein bo erva. So if you're used to it, then it's not erva. So he really opened up the door here based on the ravya. Right? This is all mostly based on the ravya. Saying that since you're ragil to it, he doesn't even invoke the Mordechai, Yeah, but it's not the Mordechai. It's the Rav Elazar Mimetz of eight lasot b'Hashem, right? Actually, no, it is the Mordechai because the Rav Elazar Mimetz said something else. It's the Mordechai. He doesn't even invoke eight lasot b'Hashem that there's nothing we can do about it. He just invokes the Ravya that since we're used to it, it's going to be okay. Now the Mishnah Berurah chimes in.
I've lost you, by the way. Sorry.
Where?
Agav, a filu v'ishto, what a filu v'ishto when reading Kriyat Shema, right?
Yeah, you're not allowed
then,
to read Kriyat Shema.
Then Agav Kula Gilbo Eino Eva, not while you're reading Kriyat Shema.
No, during Kriyat Shema. Also, Kula Gilbo Eino Eva.
So he's saying that if I hear on the radio Celine Dion, I can read Kriyat Shema. It's not an issue.
Yeah. No.
Why
are you ragil about it?
I'm used to hearing her. Sarit Hadad is another issue.
So take a look at the Mishnah Berurah. So take a look at the Mishnah Berurah. What is a ragil bo? Ritzon lamar kevin sharagil bo lo yavoli dehirur va afilu meishet ish. Since you're used to it, you're not going to come to hirur, so you can say kriyat shema. Va afilu hachi asur lechaven leanot midibura sharafilu bebagdea asur listakel leanot. But you're not allowed to enjoy her voice because even when she's dressed, you're not allowed to enjoy the appearance. So even just enjoying her voice, you're not allowed to do that.
At any time, at any given moment, not during Kriyat Shema. That's confusing.
You're saying what is when he says Kol Ragil Bo Eino Erva? Is he still talking about Kriyat Shema?
Oh, yes.
Or is he talking about regular cases and now?
Yeah.
So obviously, the safest would be to say he's talking about Kriyat Shema.
That's what it's talking about
in context. But then the Mishnah Berurah kind of breaks it because he says, "Asharia filu bebegda asur listakel lehanot." That sounds like any time. So yeah, you could listen to a woman singing as long as you don't enjoy it. That's what that means, which just sounds like what the Rabbi says.
It being a woman's voice, not the fact that the voice is.
Honestly, I think it would be fair to assume that he means enjoying it at all.
The question is what it would lead to.
What he thinks.
Whether you're.
That kind of gets back to the question of the definition. Yeah. Maybe he's right. No. Maybe he's right. But it depends on what the nature of the Isur is. That's what I want to get back to. So now, let's take this forward, right, to the modern era. All right, this is the stuff that we care about. So we'll start with the Sridi Eish, which is, you know, one of the most often quoted chuvos about this. Rav Yechiel, Yaakov Yechiel Weinberg, thank you, was born in the 1800s and he lived until about 1966. So he wrote actually more than one chuva about this issue. It's actually interesting because there seems to be a little bit of an evolution over here, and I'm really not sure in which direction it goes because it makes sense for it to be in the reverse of the way that I put it on the sheet. Because of the order of the tshuvas, I don't know what was written in which year. So we'll start with the tshuva that I put first. So he says, "Binyan mizmorim shel na'arim v'na'arot v'lo hishavti od." Says, "You wrote to me about this issue of boys and girls singing together." Ki chashavti, this is in general. Chashavti efshar yushtak hadavar d'lo nicha l'ruach haTorah. I thought it would stop because it's not b'ruach haTorah. All right, this is what he says. Says, I thought it would stop because it's not appropriate.
Because they're singing together, or we're calling Kol Isha.
They're singing together. It's
the issue of Kol Isha.
This is talking about Bnei Akiva type groups that existed in France and in Germany. That's not what this is about. This is about something else. Okay. So this is talking about in Germany, and. He says, "I was hoping it was going to start." Kayet shamati shana lechtov acherim laheter. Amarti lahatik ma shekatavti az begilayon michtavo v'zal. So I'm going to rewrite for you what I wrote elsewhere. Ma shekatov mitrei kali lo mishtamai. So there are two major reasons to be matir this case, and he's going to get back to them later. So it's going to get confusing in terms of how we do this in order. But one reason might be there's a rule that says that you can't hear two things at once. This is used in the context of the shofar, right? You can't hear two different sounds. So in theory, or even with two girls, let's say, for example. Yeah, in theory, if there are more than one person singing, you can't really hear any single person. He says, umishtamai trekole. Ven lecha chaviv yoter mima shehid uchazal dekol bisha erva. Says that I don't buy at all, because if one of those voices, one of those sounds, is something that you want to hear, you will hear it. And what do you want to hear more than kol isha, which Chazal say is erva? So he says, basically says that he doesn't buy it. Next paragraph, he says, so the Stechemed quoted the Sefer Divrei Chefetz, who was Matir. So he said, first of all, in the conclusion of the Stechemed, he says, you should really be Machmir. He says, and also he says, it has to be that you don't have any kavana to enjoy it. Says, you'll tell me that the boys, they're singing Shirei Kodesh with the girls, they're not trying to enjoy the singing of the girls. He says, don't make me laugh.
This is the same rabbi that says,
it's the same. And he says, and you'll tell me because it's Shirei Kodesh, it's okay? So he says, he quotes a Gemara that talks about in a different case where the Gemara suggested that in a situation where a person is afraid they won't be led astray by sexual arousal. When you're afraid, we're not concerned that you're going to have hirah avera. He says, haposkim hishmituhu. They left out this halacha. The lo b'ki v'akol l'fimashu wa'adim. Because Chazal, they may have had one view about the nature of humans, but the poskim saw that things may be changed. And then he says, Maran chatam sofer, hir ish al masher ratu lezamer b'shiri halal v'todot v'ashem anashim v'nashim b'kabalat p'nei melech b'et ha-knesset. Apparently during the times of the chatam sofer, they wanted to have some kind of ceremony when the king came, and they wanted to have the boys and girls sing together in a choir. And the chatam sofer says, no way. V'chi shezeh toiva u'ke'erva yechashev etzleinu, says, no way, we're not going to have it. Right? This is the Sridei Eish. Something happened. I don't know at what point it happened. I didn't date these tshuvas. I should have. But in a separate tshuva, he quotes basically the kulas that I mentioned. Masha na'arot mitpalot b'kol ram ein b'kach klum. He says there's no problem. For a tiru gedolei Ashkenazer b'tocham ha'gaon Rabbi Zil Hildesheimer la'anashim v'anashim lomar b'yachat zmirot m'shei ta'amim trei kol l'mishtamai and zmirot kodesh ein m'vien l'hiro avirot. Mentioned two reasons why it should be okay. One, because trei kol l'mishtamai, and because they're singing Shirei Kodesh. He quotes Rabbi Zil Hildesheimer, one of the gedolei Ashkenaz. And he in the next tshuva, this is the famous tshuva, where he writes directly to Minhalei Yeshurun, which is basically the precursor to Bnei Akiva, and he writes, "Horeti lehem sheyam shichu et pulatam al pi aderach sheitavu lehem gedoli Ashkenaz." Basically, I told them they should continue doing what they're doing, have the boys and the girls sing together. Why? Shehu tzadikim gedolim kavanatam haita l'shem shamayim, because their rabbis told them that they could do it, right? The heads of their Bnei Yeshurun organization told them that was okay, and they know what they're doing. And this, it's a beautiful tshuva, by the way. It's worth reading the whole thing. If they translate it into English, we should all read it, because he talks about how they're great at chinuch, and they have succeeded in inculcating the Torah values successfully in the girls of their community, despite the fact that these are girls who are going out to college and they're going to secular learning and they're advanced, and it's very hard to talk to these girls, but they've succeeded in maintaining their Yiddishkeit and keeping a halacha. And if they've succeeded in doing it, then it must be that what they're doing is right. Halavai shiach chalki began eden im agon atzadik Rav Israel Hildesheimer. And but then though, what does he say? The hata'am hu mishum et lasot la'Hashem epir Torah. At the end of the day, he says, the reason why I'm saying this is ultimately he feels there's nothing we can do, reinvoking the Mordechai. What can we do? This is life. Doesn't sound like he's all the way buying the halachic arguments being put forth. He's using a call to authority by saying these rabbis know what they're doing. And he's saying, we have to do this.
Because we skipped the whole thing.
We skipped a lot. We skipped a lot. Yeah, we skipped a lot. And we skipped, I mostly skipped most of the halachic conversation because it's kind of a rehash of everything we've seen already. And he says in the end, I've told them that they can continue doing what they're doing because their manhigim told them that it's okay. And as long as they're singing together and as long as they're singing Shirei Kodesh with those two provisos, it's okay. Those are the conditions under which I allow it, but no solos, and no non-Jewish songs or songs of a different nature. I know it's late, but I just want to finish. So if you turn the page, I have a few more tshuvas, bringing it all the way into the modern era, because in the modern era we have complicating factors. What do we have in the modern era?
Microphones.
Recordings, microphones, things like that. So how do we deal with those things? Because that's most of the cases right now. How when was the last time you had, honestly, when was the last time really you heard a woman sing directly? Like a solo by a woman singing directly. It doesn't happen that often anymore. Even at concerts, you could say you're hearing her on the microphone. Most of the time you're hearing on the radio or a recording. That's most of the cases nowadays. So what do we do? So we'll start with Rav Avadia Yosef. Rav Avadia Yosef believes that, I'll say it outside, he believes that it's okay when you cannot see her and you don't know her. Why? He says it's okay when you can't see her because then she's not standing in front of you. So, what theory is he going on? What's the problem with Kol Isha? Either that you're going to do something or hear her. Right? It's not that you're going to do something. It's definitely her. Yeah. Right? Because she's not there. You're not going to do anything. She's not there. And why not the first thing? Why not Kol Isha Erva independently? Because he says, if you don't know what she looks like, it's okay. Now, why does he say you don't know what she looks like? Why not stop with you can't see her? Because he says, what does the Gemara say about Rachav? Gemara says about Rachav that she was so beautiful that just saying your name could arouse a man. Now, the Gemara says, Rachav, Rachav, Rachav. We say it all the time. It doesn't do anything. So the Gemara says, because you don't know her. You never saw her. You never experienced Rachav. If you experienced her, if you knew who she was, then even saying her name would turn you on. So if you know what the singer looks like, or if you kind of are familiar with her, then it's a problem. That's Rav Avadia Yosef. Going all the way, hear her, and it has nothing to do with being in her presence, and it has nothing to do with what it might lead you to do, but with the proviso that that if you do know what she looks like, then it's a problem, but if you don't, then it's not a problem. Because you're not going to have your room about a woman that you don't know what she looks like. Okay.
So if a woman has, on the cover of the box, it's got a picture of her.
That's a problem, in theory. You know, you could, as long as you're not like thinking, like I think, it depends, if when you hear her singing, do you envision her face? I mean, can you... Do you?
No, because you're saying,
unless you know who it is. I mean, like.
No, I don't think it means that. Because. No, well.
I mean, why not? I mean, you know her and it means nothing.
I think once it kind of like you hear it and you immediately start to think of the way that she looks, I think that's already what Rav Avadia is talking about. I think. Because you have to keep in mind, Yoel, when they said Kol Isha Erva, they said Chazal are saying, whether you agree with it or not, that there is, what's the right word? What's the right fancy English word for this? It's not existential. There's this inherent sexual connotation in singing. And frankly, that it doesn't matter what she looks like. Because singing is beautiful. Kolech arev.
And possibly even a spoken voice based on tradition.
It's connected,
but that's not the way we're asking.
No, you're right.
It's connected.
There are certain cases, by the way, in a certain episode of Seinfeld, which we don't have to go into right now. There are definitely cases where a woman's voice, speaking voice, can be sultry and enticing. You know,
a lot is,
but that's not what we're talking about.
To the way that we manifest a voice and the way that we behave, if we are not aroused by a voice, if say,
but the way that the poskim understand it is that singing is inherently attractive.
So why not making an erva like walking around in a bathing suit?
It is.
It's not an erva.
What do you mean, why not?
It's not
an erva. They did, didn't they?
Everyone's saying that it's not erva. It's just because it causes yihul.
It's the same thing as...
No.
That's what some of the poskim are saying. That's what some of the poskim are saying.
If it's erva and it doesn't do anything, it's still erva.
No, so you're right. The Rav Yah is saying it's all about hirhur. The Rav Yah is saying it's all about hirhur. But not everybody agrees with the Rav Yah.
There's an ifsa not to cover your hair from Saita. There's an ifsa not to walk around naked from Lo Tetzeh Me'Machaneh, because that's Lo Tzni. But then, what's the issa for singing?
The Pasuk in Shir Shirim.
Yeah.
Which Chazal understood meant that singing is inherently...
Is the issa on the woman? Like the same way that she has to cover her hair?
Again, I don't want to get into who the Isser is on. It is an interesting question.
For hair and sniss, it's clearly on the woman. For the voice, it's not necessarily.
I don't want to get into it. About what a woman has to do. I don't want to get into it. I want to talk about
something. Shouldn't we say that something is gozi yuhu, and it's not a thing on its own?
That's the Rav Yah.
So shorts, with all the young ladies walk around Ranana in shorts. When they cross the street, they cross the street. That's it. So if there's no wall in shorts, because that's what they're saying.
That's assuming all three of them are the same. You're assuming all three of them are the same.
So what's the reason?
As soon as you know her, there's an issue. And if there's no issue.
If you don't know her, then there's no issue. No, but Rav Avadia could be saying.
Anything.
No, I disagree. I think Rav Avadia could be saying that ultimately the voice needs to be attached to a woman in order for it to become an erva. So if you don't even know what she looks like, then it's not attached to any woman. That's how I read Rav Avadia. I don't think he's talking about whether or not the voice is actually arousal. And you know why? Because I don't think he even has to accept the Ravya.
It's like the hirhur can't happen just from the sound. It has to have some image attached with it for you to really,
Exactly. Now, if we go forward to the Tzitz Eliezer, I think that Tzitz Eliezer has the most comprehensive tshuva on this whole topic, although he's not quoted as often and not looked at because he writes incredibly long tshuvas. So I had to condense it. I just give you the highlights. So, a few things. Number one, he quotes the Stechemet and the Tzitz and the Hagodas Maimonides that we quoted before, where he basically implies that the kol itself is not erva, but that it leads to erva. Okay? So he takes the position that Avagav de'enira le'inayim hira mi'aika v'asur likrot kenegda. So what do we learn from that? That lo yir be'etzem akol ki im ha'iru shel pol yotze mitoch girat istaklut b'dmut yokna v'lechin lo asur ki im likrot kenegda. Sounds like, this is the way that Tzitz Eliezer reads it, that, let's say for example, we go to the Kriyat Shema Sam example. What happens if the woman's in another room and you hear her voice in this room? So she's not in front of you. So is that a problem? So he says, lo asar ki im likrot kenegda. According to the Tzitz Eliezer, his read in this is that it's all about ati lidei avera. It's not about hear her. It is not about independent erva at all. It's the third one. She has to be in front of you. It has to be that there's a possibility that you're going to do something, which means that a disembodied voice, even if you know who it is not going to do anything.
Because you can't do anything. Maybe you could do something tomorrow.
That's not relevant, at least in terms of Kriyat Shema, and probably not in terms of other things. But according to this theory, because you're not going to come to look at her, he's directly responding, by the way, the Tzitz Eliezer and Rav Avadia, at least it goes one way. This is the second time that I've seen the Tzitz Eliezer say something that is obviously clearly responding to Rav Avadia. We did it a few weeks ago. I forget exactly what it was in terms of using the secular date. He actually there directly says, I saw that my friend Rav Avadia Yosef wrote this and I disagree. So here he's obviously talking to Rav Avadia. He says that even if you're afilu kesheyodau makira mikivan shemiad lo yachal lavol istakel ba, it's going to be mutter. As long as she's not in front of you, according to the Hagodas Maimonides. That doesn't mean that he passes that way, but he's saying according to that. Then he continues, and he says, another din lahatir is lemaisa b'shmiat kol shir al yidei phonograph or radio. He says, lemaisa, when you hear a person over the radio, so you're definitely not in the room with them. They're not there. He says, based on what we just said, you're not in the room with them. Then he points out, that the Stechemed says that it has to be something that's kind of a romantic nature and not Shirei Kodesh. So he says, he adds that sniff as well for a reason to be Mekel. And then finally he says, returning to the radio question, forget whether or not she's in the room, he entertains the possibility strongly that it's not even her voice. There's a huge machlokas aposkim about what the status is of radio, and it has a kula, and now we see this is the kula, the chumra is the other direction. The chumra is whether or not you can use a microphone for, let's say, for example, reading the Megillah. Right? The Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, they say you cannot, but Moshe Feinstein says that you can. The flip side of that is this, that if it's not her voice when it's going through the radio, then, and presumably when it's gone through the microphone, then that's also going to mean that it's not a problem. Now, how is he looking at that? Clearly not through a hear-her perspective, because...
No, that makes no difference.
Right? So it doesn't matter. So here he sounds like, I think he sounds like independent erva question. Meaning, a voice is erva, so it's not a voice.
If it's not a voice, it's not a voice. This is actually, by the way, the flip side of a kula. Before, we were using the chumrah, we were using this as a chumrah, meaning even if you just sit in the room. If a woman's voice is erva, then it doesn't matter whether you know her, and it doesn't matter whether you can see her or she's in the room. If it's erva, it's erva, because it's independently erva. But he's saying that may be true, but it will come up with a kula now if it's through a, if it's tramped thrown through a microphone, then it's going to be not a problem. Where I went to high school, I said this a few times, where I went to high school, so we used to use, so we used to have some kind of, like assemblies or talent shows, whatever, and there was always a chamber choir, which was most of the time boys and girls singing together, but every once in a while there was a solo with a girl. And I remember after we came back from Israel, so all the hotshot Shana Aleph guys used to go over to the Anhala and ask, you know, how could we do this? How could you as a school do this? So one of the times, I don't remember who it was, but somebody said, no, it was because she's singing through a microphone. So the truth is, I always thought that was Baba Maisa to begin with, right? But it's not. It's not Baba Maisa. But then somebody pointed out, yeah, but when we daven, the auditorium is very big, and they daven towards the front. So we use a microphone when we daven, including Kriyas HaTorah. So if it's not considered her voice, then it's not considered his voice either, and then we're not Yotzei Kriyas HaTorah at all, or any of davening. So we got to pick one.
So if you have a Jewish girl who's 16 years old, who wants to sing, she's a basura, she goes to the mikveh, she's not nida.
What the?
No, this is interesting.
Zeta, okay.
Why? Because beforehand, okay. we said that the basura is mutter, right?
Got it.
So if you get a basura who goes to the mikvah, she's not nida. That's enough to me. Number three, she has to sing
Shir Kodesh.
She sings.
Yeah. Shir Kodesh.
Why Shir Kodesh?
Because that was one of the cool. In other words, he doesn't think any one of these is okay on its own. You're saying all three of them.
Shir Kodesh, and she sings through a microphone. It should be mutter for her to be able to sing in front of men.
What's the mikveh? Well, I know, you know what? Yes. Because if she's a nida, then she's a surah to everybody, anyways.
Mishnah Berurah says the upper surah is a nida because they don't go to the mikveh.
You don't need a Mishnah Berurah to say that.
Okay. You don't need a Mishnah Berurah. Rav Dan will tell you. But if you. If a basura doesn't.
All women above the age of 13 are considered a surah.
If a basura goes to the mikveh, she's no longer nida, and then she's mutter, she can then sing in front of you. It would seem.
The surah of singing non Shirei Kodesh.
Yeah, what's the issue of Shirei Kodesh? That's the Sudei issue.
So yeah, it's heter, kind of right? Invented. It was a heter that was invented for by Hildesheimer.
That's Creed, the kavona of the people, because he's saying
there's an assumption that when you're hearing Shirei Kodesh, it will protect you from having her heard.
I think
which is what the Sudei didn't buy, but he allowed.
I think the Sudei's comment regarding that was that because they're singing Shirei Kodesh and Zmiris together, they're not thinking about anything to do with Erev or anything sexual. That
was what Rabbi Zil Hildesheimer said, and the Sudei Eish quoted it, and we saw that in one tshuva he dismissed it, but in the other tshuva, when he was talking about what people should actually do, he was willing to be matir. But even then, Eid Lasot Vashem, you can get the impression of what
Eid Lasot means. It's a bit.
It definitely. I mean, yeah. It's hard to not.
You can't walk around the street going, so as not to hear something.
Right, but he took it a step further. He took it a step further, which is it's the future of Judaism, which actually is greater fidelity to the original meaning of Eid Lasot Hashem Mepere Torotecha, right? Where does Eid Lasot Hashem Mepere Torotecha show up in the Gemara? In two places. One, when we wanted to write down Torah Shebaal Peh. And two, when they instituted that we should say Hashem's name in greeting people, Yivarech Hashem, Hashem Imachem, in the times of Boaz, right? Mm-hmm. Both are cases where, what does that mean? It's not necessary to do that, but they found that it was required for the continuation of Torah Judaism that they had to do that. The Rav Yoz's use where he says, look, there's nothing we could do. So we have to, actually, I guess... What he's saying is that we have to be able to daven. We have to be able to daven, so we have to allow it. So what Tzvi Deish is saying is that we want Judaism to continue, so we have to let the girls sing with the boys in those contexts where it's necessary. What about contexts where it's not necessary? You know, in Bnei Brak, is anybody going to say we have to let the girls sing with the boys? I don't see any reason to say that.
Four floors above.
Exactly.
Also that Isla Sos was with regards to the women that he was referring to there, which were to tell them that they couldn't sing
was completely zal to them, to was completely strange to them, yes. And therefore they were worried, yes, that they would leave Judaism. And there was this crazy, we can't sing. Why?
I'll be honest, I don't think he used those words anywhere. I know what you're referring to in the Rav Lichtenstein article. He didn't use those words. The words he used were this is something that we need to give them ruach, we need to give them something that will keep them attached to the beauty of Judaism. He doesn't use the words like, they see that everybody else is singing, so they want to sing. Those aren't the words that he uses. Those are the words that we use. Exactly. He's speaking from a positive perspective, not from a...
They're going to be insulted by you saying to them, you can't sing. I think that's what he said. He's a mashakatam.
Yeah. But not
you're
because...
saying that's not the Swedish. You're saying that's the other rabbi. That's the
no. That is the Swedish. That is the Swedish.
So he's saying that.
No, but he's not using the words like they see that everybody else in the that they see that all the non-Jews are singing. That's not.
That's how he explains the German rabbis.
Either way, he's speaking much more from a positive perspective. Either way,
how do we deal with this?
That's
today?
How he does it.
How do you deal with this today? That most people in our community, not Bnei Brak, feel very comfortable for women to be able to sing in the presence of men, and even for women to be able to sing publicly.
So keep in mind that the Swedish said that at least for live singing, he still required that it be multiple people, and that it be Shirei Kodesh. Okay, that's one. Which if you're living in a community where you find that that's necessary, then definitely reliable. If you're living in a community where it's not necessary, then why do it?
Okay, and. With the other thing you didn't want to touch on before, which is the issur on the man or on the woman?
I don't want to touch on. I'll tell you a story that they say. The Beis HaLevi was one time learning with somebody in this house, and they were learning outside, then they came in, and then as they were learning, they overheard that the cleaning woman was singing, like a non-Jewish cleaning woman was singing songs. Was it non-Jewish? Yeah, probably. Maybe it was Jewish, I don't know. It was singing songs. So the other rabbi got up to go berate the woman and tell her to stop singing. And the Beis HaLevi says, what are you doing? I said, I'm going to tell her. He says, no, she doesn't have to stop singing. We have to leave. So they left. So that's true. People still have to be respectful and sensible. But it's definitely, that issur is definitely on us. When it comes to hair, there's a whole other box of issues which we didn't talk about. Exactly. The sota issue is something that is for the women. That's what the Aruch HaShulchan says. The Aruch HaShulchan says, we've been yelling at them, telling them they have to wear hair covering, and they don't do it. So we're allowed to say Kriyat Shema, but that doesn't mean that they still don't have to do it. They still have to do it because they have an obligation to cover their hair, alts the Gemara and sota, and what the Torah says. So there's that. In terms of women and the way they dress, I don't know. I guess it's more.
No, it's also that's from the.
No, it's less.
That's also on the women. The thing with kolecha red. The question is kolecha red. Is it because it's our behavior that's the problem, or is the issa on them because they're not allowed to sing, like they have to cover
even their hair? even if it would be the issa on us, so you would still have a an lifnei iver issue, meaning a woman just goes around singing in front of men. So that's if assuming all the parameters that we said before, it's not okay because she's causing that problem. Now, keep in mind that in my school, right, where all this was going on, so I remember when I came back from Israel, the other question that we asked was that one of the rabbis in this school is we would call him Haredi, and he never left the assembly when they were singing. So we always asked, Rabbi, how could you not leave? We asked him, we're just curious. Like, there was a rule that nobody was allowed to leave. That was the rule for the teachers, because they needed to maintain what the school's policy was. So we asked him, what did he do? So I remember there were two answers that he gave us. One time we asked the question, he says, I learned Mishnayos in my head. That's what I do. Mm-hmm. And the other time he says, so you know how when you're in Gemara class, I can talk and none of you actually hear what I'm saying because you tuned me out? I can do that too. Mm-hmm. So I tuned that out. And the truth is that actually is consistent, because if you talk about, the issur of histaklus is right, is to stare. Right? What happens if you happen to see a woman? Through no fault of your own, there's a billboard, whatever. So you violated an issur? No, you happen to see it. It's not something that you have control over. So you just, life goes on.
That's a whole
so too over here with a woman's voice. Could say he stayed in the room. Seder, he had to stay in the room.
And how about in the way that erva, physical erva for a doctor,
is not a problem. Like, you can have a male doctor who can see a woman naked.
Pikuach nefesh.
No, no, pikuach nefesh. Gynecologist, not pikuach nefesh. How about somebody who's not recommended?
There's an assumption that when a person is doing their job, that they are not going to have hiv, and it's not considered.
So how about somebody who works in music, that they can get a job singing with a woman? They're doing their job.
It's an interesting question.
What's the difference between a gynecologist and somebody who sings opera?
That's a very interesting question. It's a very interesting question. Awesome. Somebody whose business is singing.
One is because of nefesh, the other one isn't.
No, but it's not. He's saying it's not always pikuach nefesh.
Yeah, but for Ganagi, it could be. You don't know that. Nobody knows that.
No, but even then, it's interesting. It's just an interesting question.
From who?
It's a very interesting question. I put this on the sheet. We might as well end with it, just for, I guess, fun. Getting back to the question of the end of the Gemara about the Hitatesh Milamata. So the Truma Sadesh is this amazing tshuva, where he says, Mikoma kol mishenu yochol la'amid et atzmo. You can't stop. All right, you it's got to this position where you have to pass gas and you can't control yourself. What do you do? So liadin shapir tzad heter shelo yechik dal amot. You should have to, after you do so, you should have to walk away from your position for amot so that you don't smell it, and then continue davening from there. Ela mitam daya mitbazeh mitbayesh b'davar mitnei atzibor sheyargishu b'davar. V'kosh keni mishlech tzibor sheyitbazeh v'yitbayesh b'yotar. He says, you know, imagine you're davening and it comes out, and you're going to what? You're going to walk away from your position. Everybody's going to know what happened. And for kol shekain, if you're the chazan, for sure, people are going to know that something just happened. So he says that's a reason why it's okay. And you know what? It makes sense to the Shulchan Aruch. Take a look. Shulchan Aruch says, "Bikesh latzet mimenu ruach milamata." If you feel like it's coming, v'nitzar harbe v'enu yachol la'amid atzmo. You can't control yourself. The Shulchan Aruch says, "Holecha acharav arba amot." Says you have to walk back for amos. Motzi haruach. By the way, I left. We didn't read this part of the Gemara. This is what the Gemara says. Ribon haolamim yotzartanu nekavim nekavim chalulim chalulim galui v'adu lefinecha cherpatenu uklimatenu cherpa uklima b'chayenu rima v'toleya b'motenu v'chozer limkomo v'chozer limakom shepasak. So in other words, you move from your position, you find a place that's hopefully free of other people. You do what you have to do. Imagine. And you finish what you have to do, and then you go back to your position. And by the way, the Shulchan Aruch is saying, you say these lines right away. Like before you go back to saying Shmona Esrei, you say these lines. This is straight up from the Gemara. But the Ramah comments, V'ayin l'kama, Simit Pehe, V'yesh omim d'kolze mayrik shemitfala beveto. That's if you're davening alone. If you're davening in a room with full of people, then you just let it go. You wait until the smell goes away, and then you continue from where you are. You don't have to say the Ribon Olam based on the Trumas Hadeshim. Shakach.
When you finish recording, I'll tell you a story. Yom Kippur, Kol Nidrei.